Football Weekly is on the air.
Rodgers under center, out of the eye. Takes the handoff to Graham. Throws it over the middle. He's got Jennings cutting left. Jennings to the 15. He's to the 10. Graham's corner to the 5. Reaching pylon. Touchdown. A sensational play by Greg Jennings.
The middle's open here. Let's see if Campbell throws it. The safeties are in the box. They're loading up. Campbell, a quick throw out left. Catch. Hayward Bay. Break a tackle and you're gone. He broke it. 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Raiders.
Miller motions right and settles as a lead blocker. Play action fake. Ben wants to throw it down the field. There's a man open running for the end zone.
We've got a field touchdown. Mike Rose, as he does best, just outruns the secondary.
And Ben Roethlisberger has just tied his own career mark. 5 touchdown passes.
This is Wayne Larrivee with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. Welcome to an in-depth look at professional football. Coming up, headliner games, Saints and Bucks, Vikings and Bears, Niners and Lions.
How much trouble is Donovan McNabb in Minnesota? Is Jim Caldwell in trouble in Indianapolis? And what is the fallout from the Tim Tebow move in Denver?
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
This is Wayne Larrivee with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. We begin with the way we hear it, as usual, and senior editor Eric Edholm joins us. Eric, up in Minnesota, the Vikings finally break through with a win last week over Arizona, but Donovan McNabb's inaccuracies are becoming a hindrance to the team, and he's becoming a target of widespread criticism up in the Twin Cities. Tell us about it.
It was the strangest scene on Sunday. They finished off a 24-point victory, and people kind of walked out with their heads hung low, and McNabb was getting booed every other series. It was very strange. There's still obviously a lot of displeasure with the way McNabb is playing, and there was one play that I think summed it up. There was a screen pass where the receiver was about 8 yards away from McNabb, and he underthrew him by about 5 yards. So that play, I think, kind of sums up McNabb's season so far and the fact that he just can't get the ball in his receiver's hands very easily.
But the interesting thing about it, Eric, is that he's not the reason they're 1-4. I mean, you know, they blew a couple of big leads. I mean, they've put up enough points somehow to win, and it was the defense that was hurting them early. And now you've got some other distractions. Veteran wide receiver Bernard Berrien apparently found himself in head coach Les Frazier's doghouse last week.
Yeah, I've definitely made the case that McNabb is not the only thing wrong with this team, and Bernard Berrien's an excellent example, too. I mean, he's been on the field about 170-plus plays, and he's caught 2 passes. I mean, that's a good indication of how ineffective he's been. I think it was a good message sent by Frazier to sit him down. They said it was for disciplinary reasons, but I think it's football reasons, too. Devin Aromashadu has seemingly passed him on the depth chart. Now, we'll see what happens this week against Chicago. Maybe Berrien will be back on the field against his old team, but this is an indication that maybe some other changes are coming down the line otherwise.
Yeah, just be careful, guys. Devin Aromashadu has broken more NFL hearts than Madonna. I mean, this guy.
Yeah, maybe you're right. Hey, another one of your teams, Eric, the Eagles, 1-4 start. I mean, everybody's interviewing Michael Vick. He's supposed to be the leader in the face of the franchise. But it was wide receiver Jason Avant who called a players-only meeting. And what was accomplished in that meeting, if anything?
Yeah, we'll find out. Obviously, a big game against the Redskins. They're coming off a bye. They've been a nice surprise so far. So it's an Eagles team that went down to Washington and absolutely croaked him last year. I think we're going to see a far closer game. To me, the interesting thing that it was Avant, a guy who had a fumble and a crucial drop pass that led to an interception on Sunday, that stepped up. He obviously said he was part of the problem. But guys, there hasn't been a defensive leader that's emerged so far. You know, and this is a Philadelphia Eagles team that's been known for its defensive prowess over the years. You know, obviously things have dropped off significantly since the passing of Jim Johnson. And right now, I don't think there's a defensive leader who's capable of turning this team around. Now, they can improve their play because they've got a lot of talent, but is there a guy who can rally the troops on that side of the ball? That's the question I have.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Eric, when you look at that ball club with the turnover on that roster, Avant's almost the only one who's got the seniority. You know, I mean, he may have been playing well, but it's hard to find guys that have been there over a period of time and enjoyed some of Andy Reid's earlier success.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And a guy like Cullen Jenkins maybe hasn't felt comfortable enough to step up and start getting tough with guys in the locker room, that sort of thing. You're right. I mean, those fifth and 6-year guys, those are the ones who are sort of the pillars in the locker room at this point.
And what about this continuing chatter about bringing in someone to oversee or assist or guide Juan Castillo on the defensive side?
Yeah, it could happen. I think it's probably going to happen in the form of bringing in an out-of-work coach, an unemployed coach, somebody who's between jobs, and showing them some tape and say, what do you see? You know, a fresh set of eyes. What's standing out to you? Why aren't we more successful? I think you'll find out that tackling and bad angles are a huge part of it, but I doubt there'll be anybody added to the staff as a de facto, you know, assistant defensive coordinator or anything like that.
Senior editor Eric Edholm, associate editor Kevin Fishbane is with us. The New York Jets made news this week when they traded their wide receiver, their veteran wide receiver, Derek Mason, down to Houston. What went into that trade there, Kevin?
Well, actually, we're finding out now that they've been shopping Mason a week ago. So before Sunday's game against the Patriots, he was on the scout team in practice last week. And production-wise on the field, he wasn't getting the job done that they expected. And, you know, that number three receiver, Gerald Cottry, been pretty productive in that spot for them the past couple seasons. And Mason was outspoken earlier in the season about the offense not playing very well. And I think it's safe to assume that that was something that Rex did not want in his locker room.
Seems to me to be a classic NFL smokescreen, though, because you got to expect a 37, 38-year-old wide receiver may lose half a step. It's the Jets' run defense that's killing him right now, and Derek Mason doesn't have a lot to do with that.
No, he certainly doesn't, and the run defense has been miserable. I mean, you look at around the league, and it's not just the Jets. You know, the Bears' run defense has also been pretty bad. But New York, I mean, that's their staple. It's their bread and butter. Stop the run on defense and run the ball on offense. They're starting to get back to running the ball on offense, but if they can't stop anybody, I mean, they let the Patriots run all over them, and they let the Patriots beat them at their own game, which is milk the clock, run the football, ground and pound, very physical, and the Patriots out-physicaled them. And I think you look at the defensive line without Sean Ellis. It's a very young D-line with Muhammad Wilkerson, the rookie, there. You know, we talked last week without Brian Thomas at linebacker. David Harris hasn't been 100%, and you're seeing the inexperience come to light there on that front seven. They haven't been able to stop teams on the ground.
Kevin, thank you very much. Talk to you again next week. Back with more Way We Hear It when Pro Football Weekly continues. You are listening to Pro Football Weekly, featuring the publisher and editor, Hub Arkush, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. Associate editor Arthur Arkush is with us. And Arthur, down in Texas, down in Houston specifically, the Texans, Brooks Reed, the next man up with Mario Williams, the great defensive end, down for the season due to injury.
Yeah, it's not good timing for a Texans team that had obviously just lost Andre Johnson with the hamstring issue a week earlier, and Williams is done for the season with a pectoral tear, and as you mentioned, rookie second-rounder Brooks Reed is the guy who will jump into the starting lineup. Now, of course, he's going to have big shoes to fill. Reed is an effort guy. He's a guy who's going to definitely get to the quarterback a few times based off just sheer will and going at it 100%, which, strangely, is not exactly what Mario Williams is always known for, but he's not a finished product like Williams. He doesn't bring the same pass-rushing prowess, and he's going to have to pick up the slack and other guys on that defense if they're going to survive the loss of Williams.
Well, D'Amico Ryans comes to mind immediately, Arthur, because I thought he was one of the most underrated players in the league until that Achilles injury last year, and he doesn't seem to be all the way back. Is he healthy? And also, tell us a little bit about the Derek Mason trade. Is this a signal that Andre Johnson's worse than they're letting on?
Well, starting with D'Amico Ryans, no, he's not healthy. He's coming off the blown Achilles last year, and it's been a slow way back for him, a long way back, I should say. And fortunately, they really like the production they're getting out of his backup, Daryl Sharpton. And it's not about Ryans not taking to a new defense or anything like that, not being a leader, because he still is, but he's struggling with the Achilles. He's got an elbow injury, and we hear there could be something else going on that perhaps is a result of him overcompensating from the Achilles. So not really good there. And as far as the Derek Mason trade goes, it makes a lot of sense. They need help. Jacoby Jones, who they're counting on to pick up the slack while Johnson is out, it was horrible last week, and David Anderson was not good in the slot. They released him and brought in Mason, who at 37 years old certainly doesn't give them the deep threat they want, but he should be able to move the chains and help them on shorter routes. So I don't think that Johnson's injury is more serious than they're leading on. They're hoping to have him back in a couple weeks, but the Mason move, you know, a veteran guy who they can count on and who only cost them a 7th-round pick, actually makes sense.
The Indianapolis Colts, their head coach coming under fire, as you might expect. No one's taking so much into account the loss of Peyton Manning. That is monumental there. But if the record is this bad, the coach is not going to be spared. Jim Caldwell's situation, we hear a lot of rumors down there. What's the status?
Well, you hit it on the head. If there ever was a year where they have an opportunity to make a move, this would be it. Obviously, he's struggled mightily without Peyton in the lineup. And the names we're hearing, the number one name that we're hearing is Jeff Fisher. This is a guy who, you know, obviously obviously has a very close relationship with Bill Polian from their time together on the competition committee. And we hear that owner Jim Irsay is also a big fan of Jeff Fisher. John Gruden, another name that's being thrown around, the obvious connection of Gruden, who never shies away from giving his affection to Peyton Manning and is obviously looking for a situation with an established and obviously a future Hall of Fame quarterback in place. So those are two guys to keep an eye on if Caldwell doesn't survive.
But we should stress, Arthur, what we're hearing now is that Caldwell continues to be pretty solid. If it gets worse, obviously things can change, but lots of sources checking in here at the moment. We don't think Caldwell's in any jeopardy, correct?
That is correct, yeah. This is kind of going off the assumption that things are going to continue to head south as they have so far. But, no, so far Caldwell does seem safe. It's just kind of what we could be looking at after the season, perhaps.
All right, thanks very much, Arthur. Associate Editor Eli Cabron is with us. The Raiders, the passing of Al Davis, obviously our condolences to the entire Davis family. There will be changes in the structure of this team, will there not?
Yeah, there will, Wayne, because Al Davis, other than being the owner, was also the football operations director for the Raiders. He was in charge of the draft and in charge of signing free agents and making trades, and now that he's gone, there's no one really in place. So we hear that new owner, Mark Davis, Al's son, doesn't really feel comfortable on the football side. He's more of a businessman. So they're probably going to bring in someone after this season to run the football operations. But we hear that they want to go along with the method that Al Davis used, which is focusing on speed, focusing on individual one-on-one talent players on defense that can play the man-to-man. A big search is going on right now in the Bay Area for the new GM. And we also hear that Al may have left a list of successors that he thinks might be qualified to run that job. So Mark Davis has a few names to pick from already.
Well, one other point, Eli, is that while Mark clearly is now the owner and has the final vote, it is the team CEO, Amy Trask, who's going to be leading this search and has actually been more involved in running the business in recent years. So I think while Mark gets his feet wet, it'll be Amy Trask who hires the next GM. And one thing I can tell everybody, because I knew Al fairly well, you bet he left a list. And there's bullets and there's highlights on it. So his impact is not gone from this team yet.
Another one of your teams, Eli, the Denver Broncos coming off a bye week. It's Tebow time. It'll be interesting now to see how it goes.
Yeah, we hear that a lot of the players in the locker room are just relieved that Coach John Fox made this move because there was so much pressure in Denver from the fan base, from just people around the organization to get Tim Tebow in there. Nothing was happening with Kyle Orton. He's a solid quarterback, but the team really wasn't doing too well with him under center. There was just so much talk about putting Tebow in. So we hear that a lot of players are just relieved that the second-year quarterback's finally getting his chance.
Eli, thank you very much. Appreciate it. It'll be interesting, like I said, to see what happens when it is now Tebow time in Denver. The games are coming up next on Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. This is Wayne Larrivee along with Hub Arkush. In the NFL this weekend, Arizona, Denver, Kansas City, San Diego, Seattle, and Tennessee all enjoy a week off. On the field this weekend, the Atlanta Falcons might be the defending AFC South Division champions, but coming off a disappointing loss at home to the world champion Green Bay Packers, they're sitting just 2-3. The Carolina Panthers come to town led by rookie sensation quarterback Cam Newton. Now, the Panthers make a lot of noise, gain a lot of yardage, score a lot of points, but in the end, more often than not, they lose, as their 1-4 record will attest. The Panthers have outgained four of their five opponents. They average 428 yards a game, fifth in the NFL. Newton's accounted for 12 of the Panthers' 13 touchdowns this season, with 7 TD passes and 5 rushing scores. Meanwhile, the Falcons, who have been so good at home in recent seasons, are actually being outgained in terms of yardage in the Georgia Dome, 436 to 284 by the combination of the Eagles and Packers this season. Where the Falcons are really struggling is on the defensive side of the football, where they rank 24th in total defense. But quarterback Matt Ryan and running back Michael Turner are not having the kind of seasons they enjoyed a year ago either. Also on this game, keep an eye on the injury report, and it's now been declared that wide receiver Julio Jones, who has been an outstanding addition to the Falcons' offense, left the Green Bay game with a hamstring injury, will not play this week. The 0-5 Indianapolis Colts, or it was the headline in this week's Pro Football Weekly, the Headless Horseman. It's the first time the Colts have been 0-5 since 1997 when current 49ers head coach Jim Harbaugh was the starting quarterback. Under Peyton Manning from 1998 through 2010, the Colts were first in the NFL, averaging 364 yards of total offense per game. Today, without Manning, the Colts rank 30th in the category, averaging just 287 yards. They are last in time of possession
at 24-31, a full 5 minutes less than they averaged under Peyton over the last 12 years. And it doesn't figure to get much better, as the Cincinnati Bengals, who own the NFL's top-ranked defense, allowing just 279.6 yards a game, are the next team on the Colts' schedule in Cincinnati. While the Bengals have outgained four of their five opponents this season, they rank 22nd of the league in total offense at 320.2 yards per game. One other note. According to Elias, the Bengals are the first team since the 2007 Niners to get their first three wins of the season, taking the lead in the fourth quarter. Hub?
Wayne, the Jacksonville Jaguars visit the Pittsburgh Steelers, and the Jaguars have been surprisingly tough on defense, or maybe we shouldn't be surprised. That's head coach Jack Del Rio's bailiwick, having played linebacker in the league for a number of years, and that's how GM Gene Smith has tried to build this team, but they have struggled tremendously on offense, dead last total offense, dead last throwing the football. They do have a rookie quarterback in Blaine Gabbert. Maurice Jones-Drew's not having a bad year. He's averaging 5 yards a pop, but the Jaguars just can't score enough points to stay competitive. As a matter of fact, they've been outscored 115-59 over overall, and 68-13 in the second half. Now, the Pittsburgh Steelers had a great bounce-back game last week after, well, quite frankly, embarrassing themselves a little bit the week before in Houston. They had a dominant performance. And you look at the Pittsburgh defense and people talking about what's wrong with Pittsburgh defense. They're second in the league in total defense. They're fourth in points allowed. They're first versus the pass. The one thing that is unusual is they're only 16th versus the run. And clearly with MJD, that's where Jacksonville is going to try and attack them. The Steelers have had trouble with the AFC South, just 11-10 all time. But at the end of the day, this game in Pittsburgh, the Jaguars have dropped four in a row. You got to like the Steelers' chances to have another one that get healthy on here. Also, the Cleveland Browns are going to visit the Oakland Raiders. And, you know, the Raiders, yes, they're an improved football team, but the bottom line is when you look at the numbers, they really struggle on defense both sides. They're 28th in points allowed. The pass a little bit worse than the run. And then offensively, well, they're second running the football. They're only 22nd throwing it, yet they've converted that into 8th in the league in points scored. Oakland pretty good in turnover takeaway at 9th. Now, Cleveland not doing anything particularly well. They're not horrible at anything. Colt McCoy had his first 350-yard passing game a couple weeks ago, and the Browns have owned the Raiders, having won 7 of the last 9 meetings between these two teams. But at the end of the day, a mediocre Cleveland team traveling to the coast where the Raiders figure to still be on an emotional high, their first home performance without their leader, Al Davis. You got to like the Raiders' chances in this one, Wayne.
Hub, the winless St. Louis Rams travel to Green Bay to face the unbeaten world champion Green Bay Packers on Sunday afternoon. Now, the Rams are coming off a bye week, which should help, but their secondary has been ravaged by injury. They are without their top three cornerbacks, and that's not a good thing when trying to deal with Aaron Rodgers and the deepest wide receiving core in the NFL. The Packers have remained unbeaten, but at times it hasn't been easy. Down 13 at Carolina, they battled back to win 30-23. Last week, down 14 at Atlanta before scoring 25 unanswered points and a 25-14 victory. Remember, last year during their super season, they never trailed by more than 7 points in any of their 20 games, including playoffs. The Rams have capability on the ground, especially if banged up Steven Jackson is ready to go, but that plays into the strength of a Green Bay defense that ranks top 10 against the run. Keep an eye on the offensive line of the Packers. With Chad Clifton out for the foreseeable future due to a hamstring injury, Marshall Newhouse, a second-year pro, will try to hold down the fort on the blind side of Aaron Rodgers at left tackle. Chris Long, James Hall, first-round draft pick Robert Quinn are pass rushers to keep an eye on. The Packers do expect to get Brian Bulaga back at right tackle, and that hub will certainly help.
Wayne, could there be a better antidote for what's ailed the New York Jets in their three-game losing streak than the 0-5 Miami Dolphins? That's what they're going to get this week, albeit in Miami on Monday night, where the Matt Moore era is about to begin. Now, admittedly, it's probably going to be a short era. They're looking for the quarterback of the future, but with Chad Henne down for the season, Matt Moore steps up and takes over. He's got a little bit of swagger, likes to throw the deep ball. Those are two things that Chad Henne wasn't doing, but, you know, Moore is not overly accurate with that deep ball, and the running game for the Dolphins has been coming on a little bit with rookie Daniel Thomas, but Reggie Bush, not much of a factor there. For the Jets, they've got to stop the run. It's really that simple. They've got other issues, but if they can't stop the run, they're not overly competitive. The Jets have a big advantage here in turnover takeaway, 13th in the NFL, while the Dolphins are 27th. You've got the Jets desperate for a win. You've got the Dolphins would like to have one, the Monday nighter down in Miami.
Stay tuned. The big games are coming up next. You are listening to Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
This This is Wayne Larrabee with Hub Arkish. Some of the top games on this weekend's NFL card. Two teams on disappointing seasons collide at Soldier Field in Chicago Sunday night. The Minnesota Vikings and Chicago Bears in an NFC North Division rivalry. Vikings come in off an impressive 34-10 pummeling of the Arizona Cardinals, but that was just their first win in five tries this season. The Bears fell to 2-3 after they were handled in Detroit by the Lions on Monday night. How about, I don't know where to go on this one. I know the Bears are struggling right now. The Vikings coming off a win don't seem like they're in any better shape.
Well, and I think the issue here is the Vikings you can pretty much write off. Forget the 1-4 record, not that different than the Bears 2-3, but they didn't figure to contend coming into the season. Clearly Donovan McNabb is keeping that seat warm for Christian Ponder. You did think, though, that they'd be better just by nature of having Adrian Peterson and Jared Allen having a career-type season and Kevin Williams now back. They certainly can give the Bears a game here. I think the Bears have got bigger issues, but also there's still a light at the end of the tunnel. If they could just find a way to adjust the game plan, create some time for Jay Cutler, he proved the other night he can make some plays if they can somehow just fix that offensive line.
Meanwhile, the Houston Texans take their 3-2 AFC South Division leading record at Baltimore, where the AFC North Division leading Ravens await. Anson Ainsworth has more.
A very familiar face will return to Baltimore for the second time in 3 weeks this season when the 3-1 Ravens host the 3-2 Texans at M&T Bank Stadium in Baltimore. The familiar face will be that of veteran wide receiver Derek Mason, who spent 6 seasons in Baltimore before being released prior to the beginning of the season. Mason was traded by the Jets this week to Houston for a conditional draft pick in the 2012 draft to help fill the void left in Houston's offense with Andre Johnson sidelined with a hamstring injury. Texans head coach Gary Kubiak says Mason's experience is one of the reasons the Texans traded for him.
You know, we had a chance to go get a guy that still runs very well, even though he's played a long time in this league. He's been very effective in this league, and we feel like we can catch him up real fast. So that was a big key, and worth us bringing him in here and giving him a chance to help us out.
The Texans will need Mason to play well quickly as they face a rested Baltimore team that is coming off their bye week with a league-best scoring defense. The Baltimore offense is no slouch either, led by quarterback Joe Flacco, who is 21-5 at home as a starter. Baltimore running back Ray Rice, who has 66 carries for 297 yards and 2 TDs, is also the team's leading receiver, thinks his team is in a great position for the second half of the season.
You know, I'm just looking forward to the second half of the season, you know, because we didn't, you know, when you look at our schedule, when you have a team like the Steelers and the Jets, you know, those are formidable opponents who know us really well, and now we get to get into our schedule where, you know, we got some teams that, you know, we can get after.
The Ravens offense will look to take advantage of the loss of outside linebacker Mario Williams of Houston, who was placed on injured reserve this week after suffering a torn pectoral muscle in last week's loss to the Oakland Raiders. The task of filling the position of the former first overall pick in the draft will fall on the shoulders of rookie Brooks Reed, who understands the pressure but feels ready to step in.
Yeah, you know, obviously there's, you know, a lot of pressure, you know, and I'm a rookie and first year playing and stepping in for a Pro Bowler, you know, so, you know, there's pressure, but, you know, I like that and I think I'll respond well.
Sunday will mark the fifth meeting between the two franchises. Houston is 0-4 all-time against Baltimore, including an 0-1 mark on the road. The Texans lost 34-28 in overtime the last time the two teams met in Week 14 of 2010. I'm Anthony Ainsworth for Pro Football Weekly.
The Dallas Cowboys, coming off a bye week, head up to New England for a matchup with Tom Brady and the 4-1 Patriots. We get this preview from Mike Petralia.
They say speed kills, and Patriots coach Bill Belichick is telling his Patriots team just that this week as they prepare for the Cowboys at Gillette Stadium. Belichick says with the likes of DeMarcus Ware and Anthony Spencer in the Cowboys' linebacking core, Cowboys can get after quarterback Tom Brady if the Patriots aren't ready.
They run well. They have very good team speed. I mean, they haven't given up many big plays, period, run or pass, and that's one of the big reasons they converge to the ball so quickly. They have a lot of team speed. It's the fastest team we've played this year. You look at plays, and you can kind of stop the film and say, you know, it looks like this is going to be a good play, and then, you know, it just collapses.
This will be the second straight week the Patriots have hosted a Ryan family member at Gillette Stadium, as Rex Ryan's Jets were handled 30-21 last Sunday. This time, Rob Ryan comes to town in his first season as defensive coordinator of the Cowboys. Head coach Jason Garrett says he's like what he's seen from the other Ryan.
They had the challenge of trying to put a defensive system in a very short period of time. I think our players responded very well to the system, and we have a long way to go on defense and throughout our football team, but there have been some really good things that we've done on defense, and Rob obviously has been a big part of that.
On the other side of the ball, Patriots nose tackle Albert Haynesworth remembers facing Tony Romo in his days with Washington.
I mean, regardless of what some people think, I mean, they're a really good team, and Tony Romo is a really good quarterback. He could be streaky sometime, but most of the time he's on point. And, you know, we just had to get after him. And, you know, that team is extremely good. You look at their record, you know, they lost some tough games, but the teams they beat are all, you know, top of their divisions right now. So I wouldn't count the Cowboys out.
Cowboys are 2-2 coming off their bye week, while the Patriots are 4-1 looking for their third straight win heading into their off week. In New England, I'm Mike Petralia, Pro Football Weekly.
Thank you very much, Mike. Analysis of more top games, Eagles, Redskins, Buffalo, Giants, Niners, Lions next. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. We resume with our preview of the top games in the NFL. Hub, the dream is a nightmare in Philadelphia as the Eagles fell to 1-4 last week. They've lost four straight. This week they're in Washington to take on the division-leading 3-1 Redskins, who are coming off a bye week. Big moment of truth, I would think, here for the Eagles.
Well, it really is. And, you know, the thing they've got going for them, when, is if you look at that NFC East, they're a game out of first place if they get a win this week, and they knock off one of the teams they're chasing. So it's definitely not too late. The question is there enough there to work with? Can they get it turned? They're not very good at linebacker. Everywhere else, it looks like things can be fixed. If Mike Vick is going to be a $100 million quarterback, it's time for him to step up and produce a couple wins.
Meanwhile, the surprising 4-1 Buffalo Bills head to the Meadowlands to take on the 3-2 New York Giants. Our preview is authored by Bart Pasterna.
As his Giants prepared for the Bills, Coach Tom Coughlin listed a wealth of positives about the current top team in New York. Buffalo scores 32 a game, is plus 11 with 5 giveaways, 12 INTs, 3 defensive TDs, 2 victories on last-minute drives, a running back Fred Jackson amongst the top 3 in the league in rushing yards and total yards. One word Coughlin didn't use to describe the Bills was lucky. That's an intangible every team has. For the AFC East co-leaders, it's been mostly good. For 3-2 Big Blue, it's been like alternate side of the street parking. One week, wide receiver Victor Cruz gets a call in a clutch moment to aid the team. The next week, that same receiver tips a ball to the opposition. Game over. Again, Coughlin isn't going to talk about luck. He feels you can create your own good fortune on the field through better communication. Giants receiver Mario Manningham.
I guess he's saying we got to be on the same page, I guess.
Good guess. Expanding on the thought is quarterback Eli Manning.
The route's being crisp, you know, making sure you're not tipping anything to lead them to jumping it. Just make sure you're watching the ball all the way in, throwing it accurately, and you know, because they do a good job of whether the ball's caught, whether, you know, the ball's in the air, they do a good job getting their hands on the ball and making plays.
Easier said than done against an opportunistic Bills D that may give up yardage, may give up points, but gets physical, takes to ball hawking like hot sauce takes to tasty wings, and above all, communicates. Buffalo coach Chan Gailey says he's not going to get caught up in D numbers or O numbers. Week in, week out, it's the results that count.
The objective in this thing is to win, to have one more point at the end of the day than the other team. I've always said that. The Dolphins in 72 played the perfect season, but they did not play one perfect game. There hasn't been one of those played. So you're trying to find you're trying to make a way to win.
So far, Jackson, Fitzpatrick, Wilson, and the rest of the upstaters have been doing just that. For Pro Football Weekly, I'm Bart Pasterna.
Thanks very much, Bart. Think about this. If the 49ers are able to hold on to a 10-point fourth quarter lead week two at home against Dallas, we'd have a meeting of unbeatens this weekend. As it is, two pleasant surprises do battle in the Motor City as the unbeaten Lions play host to the once-defeated San Francisco 49ers. Ryan Woolley has the story.
For the first time since 1956, the Detroit Lions have started a season 5-0 after beating the Chicago Bears 24-13 on Monday Night Football. The Lions' appearance was their first on Monday Night since 2001 and the first time they've won five straight games since 95. And have actually won 9 straight if you go back to last season. Next up on their schedule, a 4-1 San Francisco 49ers team who comes to town riding a 3-game winning streak and their only loss coming to Dallas in overtime in week 2. They're also coming off their most decisive victory in decades, throttling the Bucks 48-3, and Lions head coach Jim Schwartz admits the reason the Niners have been so good this season is because of their turnover differential.
Well, they're plus 10 in turnovers.
That's the number one thing is, you know, taking care of the ball on offense. They've only thrown one interception. They've gotten turnovers on defense. And I think that's second in the NFL in turnover ratio. So, you know, that's really the biggest thing.
The 49ers offense, meanwhile, ranked 27th in the league and may have a tough time inside Ford Field, as the crowd was so loud on Monday that the Bears offense was flagged 9 times for false starts, which according to Lions quarterback Matthew Stafford had the defense playing at another level.
It was electric. You know, our fans came out and did an unbelievable job. We need that kind of support every week. You know, we saw what it can do to an opposing offense. That's a really good offense, and our defense fed off that crowd.
Stafford also having the best start to his young career. He's thrown for 13 touchdowns, 9 of which have gone to Calvin Johnson, making Megatron now the first player in NFL history to have 9 receiving touchdowns through the first 5 games. Detroit's running game has also reached a season high, as second-year back Javid Best put up 163 yards against the Bears, making it the first time the team has rushed for 100 yards this season. Sunday also will be a homecoming of sorts for Jim Harbaugh. He started Michigan back in the 80s as a quarterback and will be greeted with a mixture of both cheers and boos. Many fans wanted Harbaugh as the next Michigan coach. In Detroit, I'm Ryan Woolley for Pro Football Weekly.
That they did, Ryan. Stay tuned. The headliner on Pro Football Weekly is up next. The headliner, an in-depth preview of the top attraction on this weekend's NFL card. A huge NFC South Division matchup ensues in Tampa as the 3-2 Buccaneers play host to the 4-1 New Orleans Saints, who are on a 4-game winning streak. Our headliner is previewed by Gus Kattengill.
It's back-to-back division games for the 4-1 New Orleans Saints as they take on the 3-2 Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Now, the Saints coming off a thrilling 30-27 win in Carolina, and they're looking to create a little cushion with a win against the Bucs.
I mean, that's a big deal, especially at this point in the season. We would love to have that. So for a lot of reasons, we want to win this game. But obviously, when you look at just how it affects our division and our standing, we never get too comfortable, you know, just because as fast as you can get up, you can also get knocked right back down in size. So we understand the importance of this game.
That Saints quarterback, Drew Brees, who was also quick to point out, due to the 48-3 beatdown in San Francisco, Tampa Bay will be looking to erase the memories of a very bad Sunday.
I know this. I know that coach gets those guys playing and playing hard. And they always have a good scheme coming into every game. And I look at that game last week as an aberration, you know, for them. I know that's not the type of team they are. It was just one of those days. I know that I'm sure in their mind, you know, they can't get back on the field fast enough. You know, because I think we've all been in situations where, you know, hey, you have a tough loss for whatever reason, you don't play well, and you just want to get back on the field and right the wrong. You know, I know that these games between us over the last few years have been back and forth. So the fact we're going to their place, the fact it's a divisional game early in the season, the fact that they're coming off a tough loss, I mean, all the reasons why we're going to get their absolute best performance, and they're going to be ready for us. We need to make sure we're ready for them.
The Saints defense had its work cut out for them against Cam Newton last week. This week, it's a quarterback many compared to Cam Newton, at least physically in some ways. Josh Freeman, a player Saints safety Malcolm Jenkins respects.
You know, he can buy time in the pocket, and he has guys that are working for him. He has some threats that he can get the ball to. And I think the biggest thing I see is just his leadership. You know, they have a lot of fourth-quarter comebacks, and they play well in the fourth quarter. They finish games well. So, and that's all a testament to him.
Should be fun when they kick it off in Tampa at 3:15 on Sunday. In New Orleans, Gus Kattengill for Pro Football Weekly.
You know, Wayne, what's interesting to me about this matchup is I have the feeling the Saints are a very good football team that's going to get better. Greg Williams still figuring some things out on defense. The Bucs, I don't know. I think that they can beat up on other mediocre football teams. They're still young. They're talented. But I'm just not sure that they're a contender along with the Saints in this division.
And, Hub, I agree with you. I think this is going to tell us a lot about both teams. This ball game, the headliner, the Saints and the Buccaneers, our headliner in the NFL this weekend. Time for the Handicapper's Corner, featuring our handicapping expert from the Phoenician in Las Vegas, Chuck Esposito.
Welcome in, Chuck. Great to have you again this week. And I want to start with a game that Wayne's going to be intimate with. You look at Green Bay at home against the St. Louis Rams. The Rams clearly not the team that anybody expected them to be. And yet I'm looking at a number right now of about 15. When the numbers get that high, are you worried that you're constantly struggling to get a number that's high enough?
We are. I mean, you look at that game, and Green Bay is viewed as the best team in the league right now. We know the struggles
that the Rams have had. But it's an awful big number, too. And you see a lot of teams later in the game kind of change their defensive philosophy, and they're a little bit more lax. So it is tough to put a number up. But my guess is, regardless of how high it is, we're going to see a lot of Packer money come across our counters.
You know, here's another one that I'm curious about. The New York Giants, just awful last week at home against a Seattle team that hadn't won on the East Coast in forever. Now they've got the 4-1 Buffalo Bills, and the Giants favored by about 3.5 or so. Now I know you're going to get 2.5, 3.5 points at home, but Buffalo just appears to be the better football team. Is this a question of the New York money, as in Manhattan, big city money versus the upstate team?
I think that's part of it. Part of it is that they are at home. Still some non-believers in the Bills. They did lose on the road a couple of weeks ago to Cincinnati. I think it's another major test for them. You look at the Giants in 3 of the next 4 weeks, or going back to last week, they're all home games and the bye. So it's a big game for them as well. But I agree with you. I think if that number creeps a little bit higher, you will see some Bills action. But right now it's because of New York and being at home.
Chuck, one more before we let you go. I'm curious about this. Normally by week 4, week 5, I feel like I'm getting a handle on who the good teams are, who the bad teams are, maybe a couple teams that still have hope. This week it's taken a little bit longer. This year, I should say, taken a little bit longer for me. Who are the teams that are giving you the hardest time right now getting a handle on as far as setting numbers?
Well, one of them is the Bears. I mean, I know we've talked about them in the past a little bit, but I'm just not really sure if they're good or not. I mean, they've really had some struggles defensively, which is a surprise. The other one's the New York Jets. I know they want to, you know, ground and pound, but I'm not sure how good they are. I mean, they've lost the conference games to the Ravens and Patriots. I know it's still early in the season, but those two teams that were both in the championship game last year of their conferences, I'm not sure if they get back to the playoffs this year.
Chuck Esposito from the Phoenician in Las Vegas. The Publisher's Pen is next on Pro Football Weekly. The Publisher's Pen with the publisher and editor, Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush. Hub?
Wayne, thank you very much. And our show last week was already done and on the air when we got the news of the death of Al Davis. It is a significant loss for the NFL and, quite frankly, for all of us at Pro Football Weekly. Mr. Davis is somebody who I knew very, very well. He was a friend of my dad's. And when my dad passed away 32 years ago, he took me under his wing, whatever little bit I may know about pro football. I learned a great deal of it from Al Davis. He was a polarizing character. There's no question about that, but he always talked about the Raiders as his Raider family, and he led his life that way. If you were on his side, you were on his side forever. He was a dear friend and confidant and teacher to me and all of us at Pro Football Weekly. He was always there with support, and never once did he try and leverage that relationship to get favorable coverage in the media for the Raiders, for himself, or for the NFL. He was an innovator. He was somebody who will go down in history as one of the great minds of professional football. And it's a significant loss, and our thoughts and prayers are with the Davis family.
Thanks, Hub. Very well said. That'll do it for Pro Football Weekly this week. Special thanks to the Packers, Steelers, and Raiders radio networks. The coordinating producer and engineer of Pro Football Weekly is Randy Meyer. Pro Football Weekly originates from the studios of Syndication Networks in Chicago, Illinois. For Hub Arkush and the Pro Football Weekly staff, this is Wayne Larrabee. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week on Pro Football Weekly.